This is RevTech Podcast, where we discuss everything from business processes to measurement and technical alignment. The RevTech mission focuses on effectively managing and optimizing the go-to-market strategy through methodologies, tools, and best practices. We discuss the success criteria and technical fit guides for decision-making and ensure solutions align with the business goals. Today's guest is Eldad Postan-Koren, the CEO of Win AI, double N. It's great to have you on.
Happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
I like the wave. Yes, great to have you here. So let's jump right in. Can you give us the high-level overview of what Win AI does?
Yeah, of course. So Win AI is a real-time assistant for salespeople. We are here to, sorry about being cringy, but to win two frontiers. The one and is for the rep to free them from all of their admin work, updating the CRM, taking notes, sending follow-up emails, and so on. And for the leadership is making sure the sales team is aligned, oiled sales machine, everyone works on the same methodology, everyone works following the same best practices. So that's the main two value proposition for the two different personas, but we can speak about that more.
Yeah, and how did Win get started? I'm assuming you were maybe in sales roles before and it led you to want to build a tool like this, but what's the founder story?
Yeah, so actually it's an interesting story because even though I'm a CEO of a sales tech company, I'm not a typical sales guy. So basically I came to the world of sales by mistake, I would say. The background is very, very diverse. Like I was many years in the Navy, the Israeli Navy, then afterwards like 7 years in the world of social entrepreneurship. I founded two NGOs. I won two campaigns to be the chairman of the Hebrew University Student Union, things which are not, to some extent, you can say that not related to sales. The aftermath, I can tell you that they are very related to sales. To have the killer instinct of winning campaign goes a lot about sales, but in our world that we think about it from different disciplines. But anyway, like 5 years ago, I joined the Israeli startup in the world of diabetes, became the first salesperson. That also happened by mistake, but we can speak about that. And then I fell in love with selling. Like I love the pace, the combination between EQ and IQ and you know, the killer instinct about that, being achiever. But I really hated updating the CRM from day one. It's counterintuitive to all of my personality. And then 1 year later, I became also the head of sales of the company, had several AEs and SDRs, and discovered how difficult it is to create the alignment, the consistency between them. So what I did is to write a playbook. And the day after I wrote the playbook, nobody used that. And that gave me an extra motivation to build Win AI. And then around 2020, the beginning of 2021, I left the company and did 1 year of ideation, which was, back then I thought it was really hard. Today I understand I didn't understand nothing because today is much harder. But it was a 1 year without salary, most of the time sitting alone, not in this room, it was another house. It was hard because, you know, I tried to figure out like, okay, so how do we solve the problems, to validate them, to find a partner. Along the way, I met Baal Saliba, our CTO and my co-founder. And on November 2021, we raised the first $5 million to build the Win AI, which actually was not Win AI back then. It was GetLiger. And then we switched to Win AI, much better than it. But
I get like GetLiger too. I think it's interesting hearing you talk about how you weren't in what we'd consider sales roles, but most roles, you're doing sales to some capacity. And I think people often misunderstand that. I think also the thing that registered for me was good sellers are good at building relationships, not tracking things in Salesforce necessarily or whatever CRM they're using. And you want them focusing their time and energy there. And I have this sometimes where the operations team will say, like, you know, this rep isn't good because they're not putting everything in Salesforce. I'm like, no. They're a great rep. They're out talking to people all day. And how do we help them do that? I'm wondering if that was your experience with it. Like, you just didn't want to spend your time and energy with the organizational side of that.
And I think that, you know, being very typical about salespeople, and, you know, stereotypes sometimes works and sometimes doesn't. But I think that, you know, you're, once again, the stereotype. Extrovert, you like to speak with people, you like to be fast. And then fitting out the CRM is like the opposite for that. It's very detail oriented. It's very
tactical.
It's very boring task. So I think that it's not by chance that people hate to update the CRM. And I think that's the main reason why we decided to take, like, I hate updating the CRM as our tagline or our, you know, the main value that we put out there, even though, and that's something that also can be interesting to speak, our decision maker, like the VP sales, the CRO, are not necessarily concerned. They are concerned about updating the CRM, but it's not the number one priority for them. But even though we picked the messaging because we understood that that's much more emotional and it will track more strong feelings from our crowd, so we pick that, even though it's not the problem we're solving for the managers. So that's also an interesting take about that. And one last thing, as a CEO, I can tell you that raising money is sales, hiring people, good people is sales, and getting customers is sales for sure. I think that everything I do is sales, and even though it's not called sales. So I'm 100% with you.
Yeah. Like getting the rest of the people in your company to want to go ahead with a strategy, you're selling to them to some degree, right? You want it to be a mutual decision that everyone feels confident in, but there is a sales aspect to it. I don't give a shit if my sales team updates the CRM. And I know that's not the only thing your tool does, but when I have people like Demetrius saying, why isn't it done? It's like a nagging side of operations that it's part of the process and it makes sense and you need the data in there. And so it does obviously register.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think what we're really talking about here is the bridging the gap between what people don't want to do because they are dedicated to do something else. But there's a part of the work that needs to be done in order to be better at that. Right. And that's where the data comes into play. And if you don't collect them, whichever way you want to do this, you're essentially losing an opportunity to get better at it, meaning making decisions, sales, materials, product, everything.
100%. 100%.
So you raised $5 million in November of 2021. Was that like a family and friends round or a seed round?
So back then, good old days of 2021, the money was cheaper and we raised $5 million from S Capital, used to be Sequoia.
Yep.
And then they used to be Sequoia Israel, heard about us, and Friday evening, which is in Israel, like Saturday evening, they called us 10 p.m. I don't know if I told this story before to anyone. So they told us 10 a.m., jump on a call. They said, okay, we want to give you $5 million on this and that valuation, this and that is up. What do you say? And we were like, let us check. And they told us, you can drop off the call and give us an answer. We're waiting. How did they say it? Like, they were not keeping an offer on the table. And that was a very stressful situation. And
so they ask you to really make a decision on the spot. Is that what you're saying?
Not okay. On the spot. They told me you can drop off the call for 20 minutes and come back to the call and tell us.
Oh, okay. It's essentially
the same. So in 20 minutes, yes.
For 20 minutes, maybe we can make another for one phone call.
So it was stressful. But I think that, you know, it's so we drop off the call. My bar and I, the co-founder, and we said, listen, we wanted them. We don't like the situation, but we like them. We want them. They have a really good branding. And we want them. So we went with them. And a couple of months after, Inside Partners heard about us. And they decided to add additional $9 million in the company, which was a power seed. I guess that's the first time ever you heard the term power seed.
Yep. It makes sense, but yeah.
Created. So somehow we raised quite a lot of money the first 6 months. I would say that we were very lucky first to have great investors and international world-leading investors. The second thing that we were very lucky is we raised it by the end of the hype. And the main reason why it was a good thing, because we enjoyed the cheap money or the cheaper money, but we didn't build the company to be a monster. and starting to hire like crazy and blah, blah, blah. So we hired very, very slow because it was 2022 already, but we had the, you know, the money from 2021.
You had the cheap money with the new mindset of how to go and build growth.
Best of the both worlds.
That's a really interesting story. And two like powerhouse names in the SaaS tech world in terms of investors, and also very leaned in on partnerships, which is my side of the world. So I hear those names often. So I'm interested to dive into that in a little bit. But and so have you had to raise since, or is that giving you the runway to, that's awesome.
And we kept the team not super small, but we are now 30 people. You know, not trying to go crazy. So it's a small team.
And are you revenue positive now?
And basically, and that's also an interesting story to tell about. So on June 2023, we launched our self-service. And I would say with full transparency, we didn't know what to expect. You know, when you raise a child and you put it into the world, you don't know necessarily what will be the outcome or how people will act with it. So it's very closely to that. So the initial thought was, so we didn't know what's going to be the motion. Will it be like high velocity, many people downloaded it? And then what we discovered that the self-service component of the product, and we didn't speak much about the product, we're going to speak about that in a second, allowed us not to get to the high velocity, like the, you know, the
like
Monday of the world.
Like a HubSpot model, yeah.
No, yeah. So it's not our case, but it did allow us to do very fast POCs in big companies first. And that's a crazy use case by Kaseya. Kaseya, it's Miami-based company over almost 2,000 reps. So we started there with a POC, an official POC with 20 reps. We ended up the POC with, guess how many reps?
200.
500. And that was all organically spread in the organization because it's a self-service product. So one person saw the winning AI bot on the call and he asked his neighbor, what's that? And he said, hey, Win AI, go to Win AI, they download it and, you know, and start playing around it. And it became viral in the organization. And that's something that we didn't expect from the self-service product to be. Yeah, so that's also something interesting along this journey.
That's very cool. I definitely want to dig into that more of like, what is the upsell motion there and the go-to-market side of things. But let's see this product.
What do you want to share with us?
So before that, just to briefly explain verbally. So as I said, real-time assistant for salespeople. We sit on top of the Zoom call, Google Meet call, and Teams call. So we cover all of the main video conferences. What we know to do in real-time, and you're going to see it in a second, is five main things. The first one is to put the right agenda on the right side of the call. So if it's a discovery, demo, negotiation, QBR, EBR, account review, whatever it is, you'll have it on the right side of the call. As a reminder, in addition, in real time, we can tell the salesperson, hey, you covered that, you covered that, you covered that, you covered that. You haven't covered this and that. But that's like guide them like a ways for a sales call. Make sure that you cover everything you need to cover during the conversation. Then we know to capture the notes in a very, very granular way. And I'm not talking about, you know, putting the transcript in GPT or something like that. I'm talking about actually tailoring and capturing any small piece of information that you want to capture. And in big organization, they know what they're looking for in calls. Fourth is to streamline everything to Salesforce and HubSpot and actually to imitate our salesperson update the CRM. And fifth, to send a follow-up email based on the conversation. Now, I'm going to share my screen. Since we won't be able to hear the demo, I will do it a guided demo. So you will need to believe me that there is voice here. We got to believe together. So a little bit of orientation. That's us. I'm so happy that I'm not with the same shirt today. You know, it could be embarrassing. Anyway, that's us on the right side of the screen, the gray panel. The only one who can see it is the salesperson, even if he or she is sharing the screen. You can see it here. It's metric because metrics, economic Maya, blah, blah, blah. But one of the cool things is that it's super editable. Like you could edit it to be whatever you want it to be. It could be sales methodology, you know, the bar, the metrics of the world. It could be anything else. It could be something that you made up from scratch, whatever. And by the way, also interesting to say that the metric of HubSpot is not metric of monday.com. So even though the acronym is the same, but the data is not the same. Everything I'm going to show you happens automatically. Now, the cool stuff is that we are talking and things are being captured automatically. Since you won't be able to see that because sound is not shareable, I will try. So now we're talking and I asked Crystal to tell a little bit about herself. And then she said that she's a sales enablement director and she's leading the team here. And basically, a couple of seconds after she mentioned that, the platform analyzed that she mentioned that she's a sales enablement director. And without me needed to go through, you know, any kind of script, keywords or something like that, it's a very natural conversation. Once again, you will need to believe me. The platform knows in real time to say, okay, that should go under role and responsibilities. And that's a very straightforward example. I have another example here. Once again, you will need to believe. As you can see, like different things being captured during the conversation. When I cover something, it will turn green. Now she is starting to tell me about their pain points and about the challenges. And once again, the platform in real time identified that that's our pain point. And in a second, you will be able to see here, it's like identified, turn green. And she's like ongoing, like keep telling about the problem. And what you see here that the ensuring sales team is following sales process was captured from the conversation. One of the cool stuff, and hopefully you can see that. So as she's going on and bring more and more context to the conversation, the answer is changed. And for example, if she will mention more pain points, it will be aggregated. So that's an experience in real time. We have more features in real time today, such as button cards and data from the CRM, from past conversation and things like that. And then the experience when the conversation is done is looks like that. So this window pops up automatically to the salesperson. On the right side, you get a transcript of the call. In the middle, you have a recap of the conversation. And down below, you already have all of the Salesforce in this case, but potentially can be HubSpot. All of the fields already with the data from the conversation, the salesperson can edit, change until they feel comfortable. Click on sync. And on the same second, everything goes to Salesforce. We not update any kind of object in Salesforce, any kind of field in Salesforce. The first one, the first way to update Salesforce is as a bulk note, as you can see here on the right side of the screen. And on the left side, you can see we update the fields themselves. The range, the mandatory field, the with dependency, without dependency, whatever, we know to do it all. When I'm done with updating the CRM, what I need usually to do is send a follow-up email. So we click on AI email, and on the spot, we generate follow-up email. It's a combination between two things. The template of the company of how the company wants you to send follow-up emails and data from the conversation. So for example, like template is ABC, but we want to add context and be very relevant to the conversation. So let's add the pain points and the next steps and the capabilities needed from the conversation. As you see, the email is generated as a draft in the inbox. So it's ready to be sent. The whole mindset of WinAI is to be part of the workflow, not to be another, and everything pops up automatically. So you don't need to click extra clicks. And I'm mentioning this because I think that we live in times of platform fatigue. So they have, I don't know, 10 different platforms, salespeople. They don't want another platform. So we try to build everything to be very automatic and very click-free. So that's many, many, many the experience. We have more stuff, but that's the basic experience of the rep.
So this is very compelling, and what you just said about the customers don't want to have a couple of applications that, oh, you need to put together, you know, integrate before they can use it, while they actually constitute as a part of the same process, right? But let me ask you this. So what you essentially do with the application, with the solution, is that you are not removing the process at all. You have a guided process that is getting automated. So it's still guiding the seller through the process and the chunks of the, you know, conversation, email, all of that. All these like big activities that need to happen because, you know, you have to follow up, right? If you're on sales. Right. If you don't, why even calling someone. But I think it's still keeping the process in place so that you feel like, as an executive, you feel like something is guiding the sellers, you know, in the more structured way. And it's also standardized with the abilities to personalize the messaging and everything else around. Is that right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, it's automating the playbook. So like, I'm assuming the things that pop up, depending on the company implementation, the things that pop up on our right for a discovery call versus a demo call versus a QBR actually may be different because they're different playbooks and data points that you want to gather. And so you can implement each of those kind of steps in the process and then make sure you're gathering the right feedback.
Yeah, and I didn't show that, but because it's a new feature, it was released like 6 days ago. So we are now in the middle of a POC with a very big company. Since it's not a closed deal, I won't say it because I don't want to jinx it.
Don't say it. Don't say it.
And they said, listen, we don't have a playbook for call one, call two, call three, call whatever. We have a playbook for the deal. Okay. And to some extent, Metpic is a playbook for a deal. And what we want from you is we will have the same playbook from call one to call three or four. But the rep during the conversation will be able to see what was covered on the previous call.
And then the gaps to fill essentially in call two, three, four. Yeah.
So happily, I can tell you that that's up and running. We call it continuity. It's the continuity from call one to call, you know, closing the deal. It works amazing. It's great experience. It was on the roadmap. And then this company came and told us, oh, you don't have it. It's fine. And we said, okay, we're going to have it. And then, I don't know, less than 1 week we had it. So that's also a very interesting, you know, perspective of, do we see each conversation as separate? Do we want to have a playbook for different calls? And once again, I do see, you know, we work with account managers. And for some account managers, they have actually very different type of calls. So they have, let's take IT landscape. Let's speak about your tech stack. That's one call. You have account review. That's another call. So it's not less about it from one to close. It's like periodical meetings. So it's a little bit different motion. We have to do options. Like you can play either way.
Yeah. And there's some flexibility in how it's set up. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think you have to. You mentioned about account executives. You have account CSMs are going to have a different playbook and different types of calls. You're going to have a BDRs will have a different calls and agenda. You know, pre-sales as well, right? Solution engineers. So you need to have that flexibility in order to bring them on the same process. You know, there are big blocks like you described in a big company, right? But you got to plug this kind of playbooks for each function that they need to perform as this process goes on. And you mentioned the big company. I remember that was an issue. You had no preview or visibility what these calls were about.
Yeah.
And, you know, like at some point, the deal is just getting slipped another quarter and you're asking, oh, what did happen here? It's like, yeah, we're talking about this and that. Okay, well, tell me a little bit more, right? So, and you know, suddenly $500,000 is somewhere in the next quarter and you have a hole. So, but if you have a preview to that and you can see where you are, that is, you know, important insight and intel that can tell you, okay, I got to lower my forecast. Otherwise, you know, I'm going to look like a fool.
Yeah.
So speaking about a forecast, how do you see the analytics behind all of this? Like how you provide that insight in a more synthesized way?
Let's do that. In the meanwhile, I'm going to share my screen for a second, but in the meanwhile, I will tell you that it's not only even about different playbooks on different calls. Even different people on the same call can have different playbooks. So for example, you have AE and solution engineer. They don't have the same targets on the call. We do have this capability when you can have several people on the call. They all use one bot, like one agent on the call, but each one of them see different things being captured and being tracked.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. That's an awesome thing. What I wanted to show you is our dashboard. Actually, also very interesting to speak about it from product and marketing. we didn't have a dashboard till, I would say, 1 month ago. The whole product in purpose was built around the AD experience. And we understood that we need to nail it in order to promote adoption and in order to promote happiness with the reps. And if they will be happy, the manager will enjoy, first will be happy, but second will enjoy the ripple effect, the benefits of that. So we didn't have a dashboard on purpose. The company is up and running for 2 years. We didn't have a dashboard, nothing, like nothing. So I think that's also interesting to think about the mindset. But what you see here, and you asked about surfacing the data. So yeah, I'm here some interesting things like, and that's actual data from WinAI, by the way. So for us, it takes us 3 minutes, 3.5 minutes to update the CRM. People in the industry speaks about 20 minutes, around 20 to 30 minutes to update the CRM. So for WinAI, it takes less than 5 minutes. You can see how many meetings, you can see how many CRM updates, how many follow-up emails were sent. But what's super interesting here is this part. For the first time ever, you can actually measure how much your reps are following the sales methodology, the playbook. And the three components here gives you a very, very, very good view about the sales methodology. So first you have that, like the playbook adoption. You can see the different sales methodology, different playbooks, and see how much are they covered. But then you want to dive deep into that. So what is covered, what is not covered, what is half covered, I want to know. And once again, you can move from one sales methodology to another one. And here for the first time ever, and you know, for us inside the inside sales leaders, we also look for measurements and proxies that can allow us to see what we're not seeing. So here for the first time ever, you can compare the adherence to the sales methodology for one rep to another. Now, I'm always saying this. The fact that you have a rep who is not following the playbook doesn't mean that he or she will be not good performers. Potentially, you can learn a lot if your best performers are very low in the adoption. It probably means your playbook sucks and you need to adjust it. That's an insight, which is, you know, you cannot know it today. You don't have, you can go and listen to all of the recordings, but that's, you know, when you have a big team and becomes ridiculous and unheard of. So that's a very unique data points that we provide to our managers who use WinAI.
That is super helpful. So that gets me to another point about the impact that this tool can create for sales enablement. And maybe the real question is how much dependency your tool has on sales enablement. I can see this works for higher managers. This works for maybe some directors in a small, medium company, maybe larger company. But the bigger the organization you have, the more dependency in that regard you're going to have on the sales enablement. So how do you see the benefit that your tool can provide to sales enablement function and make it work easier?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. I think that one of the things that I learned along the way is that sales enablement teams are not necessarily the strongest in the organization. I mean, I'll speak about the influence from our limited experience. I think that sales for sure and RevOps second, and enablement probably third in influencing the organization. And once again, it's really challenging because each organization define enablement differently. I know that some organization would say sales methodology is under enablement. Some would maybe say it's under RevOps to some extent, or go-to-market strategy operation, which is the best title on earth because I know that they need our product. A company that has go-to-market strategy and operation, I know that they need us. So I love this title. And I think that if sales enablement is in charge of bringing new sales methodology to the organization or have any kind of sales methodology, and once again, you would be amazed how many big companies that all of us knows the logos has no official sales methodology or have no official alignment. And I'm not talking at even between territories and not between segments. I'm talking in the organization, in, you know, US, SMB, whatever. And I think that we give them a very good tool to bring new methodology in not a very big lift, actually very small lift, to onboard yourself on WinAI takes 2 minutes. To build a playbook takes 10 minutes, 5 minutes, and that's including connecting and map it to the right place in the CRM. So it's almost seamless, I would say.
Yeah, I was curious if you're going to start to pull in, if there's a goal to start to pull in like win-loss data or stage data or sales cycle data into the analytics to say like, okay, when you're using this playbook, you've asked these questions, you see X percent higher win rate or whatnot. And like, the bigger question here is, what's the metric you tell your customers to look for to measure success of implementing WinAI?
So you asked two different questions. So I want to answer the first one, and then I will
Please
ask
do.
The first question, I don't know if you meant to ask this question, but let's see. Otherwise, I will just answer that you did a question you didn't ask. So the first question was, are we planning to give and surface more insights to the managers? Okay. Now, the short answer is no. And it comes with a reason. I believe, and sorry for bringing politics here to the conversation, I believe CRM should be great again. I believe that the CRM should be the one source of truth. And if you want to have analytics, if you want to have trends, if you want to learn something, you have a great tool, it's called CRM. You have great dashboards, you have great reporting. Salesforce and HubSpot dedicated, I don't know, hundreds of millions of dollars to build that. The one main problem is people don't get the data into that.
Yep.
And I don't want to replace Salesforce or HubSpot as generating the insight that they should generate. I want to streamline the data better. So that's about how do I see like insights to the manager. Once again, I'm not sure that the question that came, but the second question, which I'm sure that you asked, was about like what's the value proposition or what's like the success criteria for POC. So there we see three main things. First is it was proven a couple of times that better adoption of the sales methodology equals better win rate. So if I'm able to improve before WinAI and after WinAI, the playbook adoption, the sales methodology adoption, that equals money, that equals better win rate, first. Second, efficiency, productivity. If you have 100 reps, and instead of dedicating 20 minutes to update the CRM, it takes them 4 minutes, and they have 2 calls per day, which is not a lot, 2 calls per day. Potentially, I could save you half an hour per day. Let's do 1 week. It's 2.5 hours. Let's do it 1 month. So it's a lot of time. It's a lot of money that can be utilized to bring more value to the organization. And third is CRM hygiene. Putting the right data in the right place in a very consistent way, it allows the organization to, once again, get better results, better insights, better trending, better understanding, better forecasting. So those are the main three value propositions that we see.
Yeah, that makes sense. Those were the questions I asked. So thank you for answering both of them. I was going off on two paths. You're essentially increasing seller power, right? Because the less time they're spent in Salesforce or HubSpot, they're spent hopefully selling. And then the second point about hygiene, we're going through this process right now. We're setting up a call to look into the big deals that we have ongoing so that leadership can understand them. And I'm like, well, if we just had notes in our CRM, they could understand it at any point. And so we're basically adding a meeting to ensure that we get notes in our CRM and we can review them all together. And it's like, even that time suck of getting all the leaders in the room for an hour versus just having the data up to date in there. So there's many efficiencies that are gained for sure.
Yeah, and I think that another layer to add on top of that, even if your reps taking notes, and let's say they write a blurb, which happens in most organizations, they write a blurb, which they are the only one who can understand it. It's unstructured. Potentially 2 weeks after they wrote it, they don't understand what was written. No one else who will read what they wrote will be able to understand that. If they were fired,
yep.
If if you had a handover from SDR to AE to solution engineer to customer success to account manager. So what we see is the motion should be moving from note-taking as a blurb into updating fields. The more you update fields, you can create, you know, consistency and alignment in the organization. Now, even that is not enough. Because I can tell you, in a POC we did a couple of months ago, close lost. It was our first, right? Part of the deal.
It is. You can learn from that.
Yeah. It was, we were premature. It was like the moment that the months that we launched the product. But anyway, what was very interesting there, they did update fields. And they had a field called map, mutual action plan. Half of the rep didn't update it at all. One quarter of them put there a link to a map that they created on a deck. And a quarter thought about it as next steps. So once again, even, you know, updating fields is not enough. You need to have, and I think it really believe, you know, I'm subjective about that, but I really believe that the AI can create this consistency. You have to have consistency about it. Like the data should be from the same category, from the same thing, so you can learn from it.
Yeah, I think it narrows down to the purpose behind and the intention behind the field and the information that you're tracking in these fields, right? Because you, like you said, it's the one thing is to have a methodology. Another one is to have a fields that are acquired that are supporting the methodology. And then you need to have the specific information that is captured to reflect that intent that is aligned with the methodology, right? So you have a layers of information, intention, and gathering that will eventually give you a quite good understanding where this is going. I agree.
Yep.
So what type of customers are you seeing that's the right fit for Wynn at this point? You've mentioned some larger sales teams, but like what's kind of the minimum and what are the qualities of them?
So I would say with Foods and Espresso, we do have customers today who have two salespeople, but I think that the majority of those organizations are looking for a recording platform, maybe summarization, and that's enough. Basic CRM integration. When you're, I don't know, starting to be transient, once again, very mid-market, it's not huge companies, you are looking for more consistency. And that, of course, going up, it's getting harder because you have territories, you have segments, you have multinationals, but different languages. So we see the challenge of alignment and consistency much bigger in bigger organization. And then that there's a very big appetite. As I said, when you have a go-to-market strategy and operation team, it's a good symbol that go-to-market operation and strategy is a challenge in the organization.
Yeah, that's the key that you're looking for, although I'm sure others are using it as well that don't have that and just don't know maybe they need it. I'm assuming the difference between the self-serve product and in more like a enterprise or customized solution is being able to add additional fields, have multiple playbooks. Like, is that a little bit of an out-of-the-box self-serve offering?
Yeah, we do have two different plans. One is the basic version, the pro version, which is less customized. And you have the enterprise, which is 100% customized. And I think that the moment you want to sell to enterprise, you need to understand two things. The first, security should be non-issue. So we are SOC 2 and the ISO and GDPR, blah, 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 I think. And I'm when I jump on a call, I jump on many calls. We're going to speak about that in the end. When you tell that in advance and all of the security, it shows that you're enterprise ready. But second, in order to be enterprise ready, you need to be able to have 100% customization. And it's 100% customization to the playbook, 100% customization of the emails, everything should be customizable. And also, you know, things that you don't think about, but like user management and admin capabilities that for an early stage startup, it's not the first thing that you will develop. But if you want to work with enterprise, that should be very high in your, you know, roadmap.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so you're doing some product-led sales, as you mentioned, like that self-serve product is helping to sell through the product. It sounds like you're doing some founder-led sales, but kind of what are your pillars of go-to-market? Are you utilizing partnerships at all? In addition to that, marketing, what does that look like?
So we have inbound, of course. We still do partnerships. So I'm make a long story short, the main reason why I came to sales is because my previous company failed in partnerships. And then I came to the CEO and I was telling, listen, we need to do direct sales. Otherwise, nothing will gonna happen here. And this is how I got by mistake to sales. So it was not my go-to to do partnerships. Once again, we're trying to change it now. So it's all direct sales, hunters, a little bit of inbound, but mainly, you know, go take the phone, call people, ask them, and close the deal.
And you're getting involved in a lot of those calls, it sounds like.
Yeah. Once again, each one of us speaks from the wounds of the past. I don't know if it's translated well in English. In Hebrew, it works well. So I used to work in a company that the CEO was very, I don't want to say the word disgust, but really detached from everything which is S&M. It was very technical, very nerdy. And I saw that the fact that he's not jumping on calls allowed him to be detached mentally from reality and not understanding that we are facing a huge problem and not understanding there is no market or there is market or where is the market? What do we need to get to the market? So it's really easier to be an entrepreneur with happy years and to hear only what you want to see and to be always optimistic. But I think that's what sales in the early stage is not only about bringing revenue, it's about product market fit. And you need to be in the field, you need to understand the pain points, you need to understand what is not working with the product, what is compelling for users, what is not, like how do you need to market it. So you're building the foundation, you're not generating revenue, or you're building the foundation of the company, of the go-to-market, of the product, of the technology. It's all about that. So I strongly recommend people and CEOs to be on calls. And I think that more than this, I think it's very important that even developers should be in early stage or, you know, maybe later stage as well, to be on calls with customers or with prospects. Because when a developer develops something in an academic environment, you know, they need product tell them you need to do this and that, but they don't have the mindset of how we use it, we're going to use it. And I think that as much as you can be involved with what's going on, it's better.
Yeah, I forget what company it is, but there's one of our partners, which is why I'm annoyed I'm blanking on it, has every member of their team spend at least a week a year being on the customer support team. So from engineer to salesperson, and you have to do your week of doing that and hear the customer's feedback. And I think it's one of the most valuable things of like, okay, what are we building and what are we overselling or what, you know, and it just gives you such good, including the CEO of the company, right? And so that's a way as you scale and grow that you could implement something like that as well. As we were talking a little bit about partners, there's a couple, I'm wondering more around competitors, but the two that popped in my mind that I'm like, are they partners? Are they competitors? Is Gong and where they might be heading with AI. And then we talked to Swift AI not too long ago, who's doing something a little bit similar. They're a startup too. So we can connect you if you don't know of them. But I'm curious from your perspective, who are the competitors?
What was the second name?
Swift AI.
Swift AI. Interesting. You always learn a new thing.
Yes.
So it's not on my top list of competitors, but of course, Gong was there from day one. And when I say day one, is raising the money. Gong is a great company, Israeli company. The headquarters is literally 200 meters from our headquarters. Much fancy, the headquarters. And from day one, it was very clear that we are on the same area. And I understood that we need to, you know, how to differentiate ourselves. The two main differentiators that were there 2 years ago and still up and running till today, or even three differentiators, is our deep commitment for real time. And today, the world of retrospective analysis, you have Gong, Larry, Chorus by ZoomInfo. You have Einstein Conversation Intelligence. You have the Phantom, the Avoma, the Firefly. It's a huge list of companies. Of course, Gong is the leader, but you have a huge list of I would say even hundreds of companies who are doing retrospective analysis. We believe that, you know, going from A to B and then going to B in the end of the road to ask yourself, okay, what should they have done better is great, but I believe that Waze gets much better experience. And I tell that as a person who used to got lost twice a week. It's a true story. I have no orientation at all. So real-time guidance saved my life, changed my life. So this is why we put a lot of emphasis on the real-time. The second part is this CRM part. So we build a very strong ability how to update, actually to update the CRM and imitate our salesperson, update the CRM. Now, the third part is the customization. Now, it's cool that today Gong has MedPeak, like they can tell you if you covered MedPeak off or not. But as I said, MedPeak of company A is not the MedPeak of company B. It's not tracked the same way. It's not the same field, not the same competitor. It's not everything. Everything is different. Yeah. So the play of customization is our play. Once again, you don't want to do professional services for everyone. So what we did, we built the product to be very flexible and being able to change it slightly to fit to 100% of the sales process.
Sorry, that's why I said it could be a partnership, right? Like I don't think they're doing a similar thing, but it is different. Is there anyone doing exactly what Wynn is doing or you'd say is a direct competitor?
Yeah, we have three direct competitors. One of them is Salesroom from Boston, which got closer to us in the last couple of weeks. We have Attention.tech from New York. Great guys. Anis, I. And we have CBill from San Francisco. So this is at least the three main direct competitors that we know. All of them are great people. And once again, from my past experience, when you work in company, when you don't have direct competitors, that's a very big problem. So I'm proud that we have direct competitors.
Yeah, and it's always good, especially if you're all starting around the same time. Like it's a new area and there's education and you all help lift that up together, especially if you're close with some of the other people.
Yep.
Yeah, actually, I know the Sybil. I recognize that company. I've been in conversations with them in the past. So since we talk about a product, by the way, I'm wondering how your neighborhood looks like. You have a Gong, you have yourself, or who else is in the neighborhood? Are there other technologies like this?
Yeah. So once again, it's a very, 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 very crowded neighborhood. And once again, it's always a question like, how do you different yourself? So that are endless.
You meant like physical, like the tech hub area.
Yes, yeah. Okay, so these guys, I know them. We're competing.
So actually,
getting
we
the
have
same elevator.
No, listen, Israel is a startup nation, right? So you have Novacy. It's Israeli, once again, or hi. Great team, great people. Their take is Gong plus computer vision. So I can analyze if people are in the conversation or not and things
the
like
body
that.
Language.
Yeah. And yep. Everyone tries to find his, you know, differentiator. And then once again, they also sit in Canopy. So it's close by.
There you go. You see? I knew there was more here in the same neighborhood.
I could take it even to, you know, there are platforms which are more RevOps oriented, like Momentum, Rattle. But also Control, Israeli company, also some overlaps with them. Yeah, so, you know, when you sit in Tel Aviv, when you sit in the area like that, it's dominant.
That's awesome. But since we talk about a product, let's move to that part. So what's next on the product roadmap? What do you see this big thing? You mentioned about the real time that you're betting on this and you say that that's kind of the North Star kind of direction you take the company. What are specific features that, you know, I'm not asking you to share all the secret sauce here, but, you know, I'm pretty sure you have in mind what do you want to work on and what do you want to add to the value of the overall platform?
Real-time cue cards, real-time bottle cards. Cue cards about knowledge about the product, bottle cards about objection handling, real-time social proof. You know, hey, we already sold to a company very similar to you and then you'd be able to name drop it and to bring the use case or the case study. Real-time guided about how asking the question or how diving deeper. So it's all about the fact that you can change or you can intervene. You can be meaningful during the conversation. In this current ecosystem and in current environment, every call counts. And you don't have the luxury to lose one call. So you need to win every call. I sound like a commercial or an ad of
Winnie. No. That's a very important thing. This is an important message. I think we can connect this with a lot of other things that are happening on the in the market, right? I think people are inundated with the emails, so they don't read them. You can write the best sequence ever, and that might never reach somebody's mailbox.
Yep.
The phone calls, I mean, I don't know how about you, but if somebody's calling me from an unknown number, sorry, buddy, right? I have other things to do, right? It has to be somewhere in the neighborhood. I'm thinking, okay, maybe something happened in my school, or I don't know, my wife was having an accident or something, right? But that's unlikely to be picked anyways. So you're right. You're fighting for attention on multiple fronts, so you can't squander that opportunity when you talk to someone. It is a kind of the nugget that you're getting, and you better handle this properly, because if you're not, you're unlikely going to get another 30 minutes, 45 minutes in somebody's calendar. So unless it's a pain in you-know-what problem in a company, right? The walls are falling, the ceiling is gone, like something like that, right? But unlikely, right? Most of the solutions that people are getting called about, they're nice to have.
Yep.
Right? So I think it sounds like commercial, but it has a lot of substance. And I can tell from my experience, that's exactly how I look at it.
And what just keyed for me is like, I could go and read a help center or knowledge base of some sort and be able to populate information or objection handling. There might be some more cookie cutter objection handling, but is there like real-time info that can answer a question, and does that eventually get brought in? It's kind of with AI and not having to program all of it, it's a little bit endless in what you can accomplish.
Yeah, and you know, generally speaking, I think that I don't know, like my vision is interesting, but I think that any kind of digital communication in the future is going to be augmented, and it just makes sense. And when I say augmented is, you know, telemedicine conversation. Yeah, it's very scripted conversation, or not scripted, but it's very structured conversation. And you need to make sure that you cover everything you would need to cover. If you think about it that way, it sounds very similar to sales. And if you think about it for hiring, you need to say, to ask the same question, you need to collect the same kind of data, and you need to put it in the ITS. So the acronym changes, but this process is very, very similar in many different aspects of our life. Even for investors, for example, they ask the same question and they need to put it in that they have their own CRM, whatever. So one thing that I believe in the world of augmented communication and co-piloting, you know, our environment. So that's my overall thinking about this, you know, the vision and how we see that solution.
Yeah. No, I think it's a very valid point too. I think it's probably my question for you. Of course, all these tools like yours are bringing an opportunity to be more effective and productive, right? So if you multiply this to the number of sales reps, you know, SDRs and CSMs and a kind of support team in your organization, you know, you're going to get quite a bit of money saved from their work, right? And, you know, money spent for money you're getting back on the ROI is probably going to look better because of the adoption that we talked about. But I think there's still an open question about what's the future of sales? Or should we expect that, you know, the teams to be larger? Should we expect the teams to be actually smaller, more nimble, more data oriented, more reading the data, kind of the outputs, and getting trained on things that, you know, the systems are identifying as a gap? Or we even go even further and we say, look, a lot of these sales will be just simply replaced. I've heard all different opinions. I wrote a small piece on LinkedIn on my newsletter about that, that we should be careful about that. But I'm not conclusive, right? That's why I'm asking.
So my take, I'm not a prophet, of course, but let's take the PLG as an example, and maybe we can learn from this. So PLG was a very big buzzword a couple of years ago, and I think that the death of OpenView, like a VC that was very big advocate of PLG, I don't think it marked the death of PLG, but of course it's not the peak of PLG. And why I'm mentioning PLG? Because the ideology behind PLG says we don't need cells. And you know that you can always see the same graphs. Young people don't like to speak at all with people. Of course, they don't like to speak with salespeople. So potentially, you can say PLG will eat cells. And it didn't happen. Now, I'm not saying that the PLG revolution, which was it's not a revolution, it was a
concept.
A concept.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
And AI is a real revolution. So it's not the same magnitude, but I think maybe we can learn from case one to case two. But understand that sales is not about data passing, you know, you ask me something and I will give you an answer. It's not about that. When I sell, I have so much more value and so much more messages that goes by the communication. Some of them are not, you know, the fact that I wear the shirt of the brand means something. It means about dedication, about the many things that maybe you don't even understand, and they are in the subconscious. That was a very long answer to answer that. But in the end of the day, I believe that people will still want to speak with people. The boring and the tedious and the technical parts will be disappeared. Updating the CRM, sending for that will be disappeared. But my ability to convince you that you need A, I think that's won't be replaced by AI. Once again, maybe we'll live in the world of my avatar as a buyer will speak with your avatar as a seller, and they will negotiate, and they will, I don't know. I don't believe we're going to live in this world. But once again, I'm not the prophet.
Yeah. Not anytime soon, hopefully. I'm not ready for that world. Maybe the younger generations are. Do you have a couple other companies in the AI space that you think are doing really cool things with AI?
Well, that's a great question.
Because you're kind of taking like the co-pilot route. I think a lot of companies are taking that route with AI. Yeah. But I don't know if you've seen other good applications of it.
One of S Capital puts for a company called Run AI, because you must have AI in the name. So they allow to machine, you know, GCPs, right? Yeah. That run AI, like the engine itself, to be 10 times more efficient, which is trillions of dollars. It's crazy. And I think that's a very interesting implementation of AI. And they came in the right time because generative AI became huge in the last year. Hopefully they're going to be sold to NVIDIA in a very big deal. Not jinxing it. So that's one thing that I had in mind. I think like Vetter, I really love their, first, I love the company, I love the people, I love the branding. They help you to write the best emails. Once again, very straightforward usage of generative AI, and they're doing well, right? They're doing great, and they have great parties. So I love Lavender.
It's a good reason to like a company.
Always about the people.
I agree with that.
So yeah, I think that's it for this episode. Thank you so much for joining us, sharing all those great insights about AI and in the go-to-market and sales space. And thank you everyone for listening and watching. Thanks for listening to this episode of the RepTech Podcast. Please subscribe on the listening platform of your choice and leave us a review to let us know how we're doing.